We're now going to turn our attention to my good friend, internationally known, world-famous motivational speaker, Les Brown. Les and I have developed a relationship over the last few years where we've really done a lot for each other. We spent a lot of time on the phone talking about different strategies, different things that we need to do to continue to grow our business. And we wanted to make sure in this program we shared some of that with you. So sit back, listen, and enjoy Les Brown. And you'll note this man is not short for words. Les, I wanted to thank you so much for spending some time with me today. I know your time is very valuable, so let's get right to it. Tell me a little bit how you got started in your company from day one. You've got an incredible story in case some of the people listening to this haven't heard about it. Tell me. In fact, this morning I was telling my mom about your story. She thought it was the coolest thing.
Okay, my story about how I got started.
Yeah, from you. Just from your birth, from you know where you came from.
Well, one of the things I talk about is how people can begin to look at the situations in their lives and overcome those things and don't allow the things that they have experienced, have gone through, to define their future. I was born in a poor section of Miami, Florida, called Liberty City, in an abandoned building on a floor with a twin brother. And when we were 6 weeks of age, we were adopted. And when I was in the fifth grade, I was identified as EMR, labeled educable, mentally retarded, and put back from the fifth grade into the fourth grade. And I failed again when I was in the eighth grade. But because of my mother, and I feel like Abraham Lincoln, who said, all that I am and all that I ever hope to be, I owe to my mother. And a high school teacher named Mr. Leroy Washington. In fact, I talk with him on a weekly basis. I met him one day when I was in class. He was a substitute instructor. He insisted that I perform a task. I told him I couldn't do it. And then he said, why not? And I said, because I'm educable, mentally retarded. And as the students erupted in laughter because they knew that I was in special education, he came from behind his desk, he looked at me, and he said, don't ever say that again. Someone's opinion of you does not have to become your reality.
Mm.
And that became really the beginning, the genesis of a relationship, a lifelong relationship, that he began to teach me things just by his character, by his beingness, and just by the example that he set, what the possibilities were for myself.
Wow. So when you got started, I mean, here you are, you're a black fella, you're poor. How in the world do you get the mindset that you're going to speak in front of thousands and thousands of people and they're going to pay you the money they pay you and you're going to have to create this talent and be able to speak and articulate your words in such a way that people are going to want to hear you and listen to your story? I mean, that's a major road to hoe.
Well, one of the things that we teach and we tell people that it's something I think it's subtle, but it's very important in the process of beginning to move into your greatness, that you don't get in life what you want. You get in life what you are.
Mm.
That what we produce, what we achieve, what we earn, what we accomplish in life is a reflection of our growth and development as a person. And so most people, if you ask them, can they do more than what they've done thus far in life, most people will say yes. Now the question becomes, why aren't they doing it? Well, I think that most people aren't doing it because they don't know that they don't know and they think they know. So therefore, they're not open to getting any coaching and providing any type of assistance for themselves or support that can help them get to the next level. And the other thing is that I just think that most people just lazy. They stop trying and yeah. They allow their circumstances or things that they've experienced to determine their reality and their future.
Right. So what motivated you? I know your mom was a big motivator for
you.
That was
really the most driving force in my life, that this woman at 46 adopted 7 children that she didn't have.
Wow.
She had a third grade education, and she had the courage and the faith to believe that she could, even though she had no experience being a mother, that she could raise 7 children by herself. And I saw her scrub floors on Miami Beach, and we ate the leftover food from the families that she cooked for, and we wore the hand-me-down clothes of the children that she kept. And I said, if this woman can do this for me, and the woman who carried me did not do it, then the least that I can do is, one, make something of myself, and two, do something for her when I become an adult. And I made a pledge to her that I would take care of her and never allow her to be committed to a nursing home when she became older. And I did take care of her until she was 88, and I bought my mother 4 homes altogether. I saw a sign once that said, God took me out of my biological mother's womb and place me in the heart of my adopted mother. So the driving desire to make something of myself, to make her proud, and to just say thank you in any way that I possibly could, I think was a driving force in my life.
Incredible, Les, incredible. So Les, when you got started into this business, be honest with me now, how confident did you feel about your success?
When I got started in this business, I didn't think about how successful I would become.
Okay.
I became involved in this business. There's a saying that Mr. Washington used to say to us, when you look at the goals and dreams that you have, he said, as much as you have chosen it, it has chosen you. I love to speak. I love to help people. And they say that a career is something you love so much, you do it for nothing.
Yeah.
And you do it so well that people will pay you to do it. So I became involved in this business to speak to people. And because it's something that I love, it became my passion. It was something that I wanted to do extremely well. So I went around and I saw other speakers. And in the process of seeing other speakers, going to seminars and workshops and listening to tapes and reading books, I discovered that people got paid to do what I do to have fun.
Right.
And I said, wait a minute, if they can do this, then I can do that. And so, therefore, that's when I began to contemplate becoming involved in this. But by that time, I'd already begun to get paid to speak.
Right.
Because I had such a busy schedule on a volunteer basis, people started offering me in church love offerings to come and speak at their church gatherings
right.
and various organizations and businesses. And then I began to say, wait a minute, how do I charge? How do I begin to set a fee for what I provide? And that's when I began to look at going into the business of speaking, but I was already involved. In fact, I talked to organizations. I said, there's a difference between being in a business and the business being in you. So the business of speaking was already in me,
right.
and I began to earn money doing it. I developed a reputation at being pretty good.
So when did you start feeling successful at it? And is that about the onset there?
That's when I began to start thinking about, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is what my life is about. There's a quote I love very much. It said, man was not born to work for a living. They say man in a generic sense.
Right.
Man was not born to work for a living, but to live his making, and living his making will make his living. I believe that I survived 1 out of 40 million sperms to talk to people for this world. For this reason came I into the world. Come on now.
Yeah, man. So tell me, how do you define success then now?
To me,
I mean, there's a lot of definitions.
There are a lot
obviously.
Of definitions, and I think that success is doing that which gives your life a sense of meaning and value, providing service and value for others, and holding yourself to high standards. And how you do it, and setting yourself apart. You know, Henry David Thoreau said, do not go where the path may lead, but go where there's no path and leave a trail. So find some way in which you can provide service to people. Earl Nightingale said that your success in life will be measured by the quality and the quantity of the service that you provide. Scripture says the greatest among you will be your servant. So find a way in which you can provide service. Ed Foreman says, if you give enough people what they want, and then they will give you what you want. Ed Foreman and Zig Ziglar both coined that phrase, and I believe it very strongly.
Yeah, it's true. So let's talk about your business a little bit. Give me some of your strengths and tell me some of your weaknesses, and what do you do to carry over those weaknesses?
Well, in the area of business, I can just tell you that is a weakness for me. Even though I've earned over $34 million in the last 23 years doing this business. But
wow.
One of the things that I embrace, which I'm now transitioning from that, is that I felt that if I was good enough on the platform, that the money that I would lose through lack of knowledge or through incompetence, people that I hired who did not know what they
right.
were doing, that if I was good enough and mastered the platform in terms of the impact and the value that I brought for the organizations, the companies, and the people that I spoke before, then I would earn more money than I could lose through not knowing the business
yeah.
and having people who did not know. Now I'm at a stage, because of my reputation, because of the things that I have achieved, now I'm at the stage that I can command
mm-hmm.
and attract people who have the expertise, the knowledge, who have everything that I need, the maturity and the wisdom in this industry to give me the things that I need to go to the next level.
Very true. I hope you're including me in one of those people, Les.
Oh, you most certainly are one of my resource people. I have a quote that I embrace that Del Toro McNeil said, that your network determines your net worth.
Yes, I
having
like that.
Having people that can contribute to your growth and development, and you're one of those people
well,
in my life,
vice versa.
Can help you go to the next level. Einstein has a quote that I love very much. He said, the thinking that has brought me this far has created some problems that this thinking can't solve.
Yes.
Okay, so that which has brought him to that point can't take him where he want to go or keep him where he was at that point.
Yeah.
And so he knew he had to have the infusion of some other thinking to begin to get a breakthrough. And so that's what I'm working on right now, always in my life, growing and expanding and getting a breakthrough.
Yep. Now, let me ask you this. And I'm, you know, I've got some of these millionaire mentors that are on this program also, and they, I think they've been in business for some of them 40, 50, 60 years. I think they've forgotten the hard times. And you know how hard I've had it, and I certainly know how hard you've had it. What do the hard times do for people? Because, you know, they're thinking, I'm trying, but when? What does it tell people the advantage of a hard time? Not like they want to hear that, but I mean, it's reality.
The good times, you put it in your pocket. The hard times, you put it in your heart. What the hard times will do for you, it builds character and tenacity. It helps you to learn how to innovate and to be creative. And through being relentless, eventually you're going to hit a pay dirt. But I think that life has its own way and its own time schedule, that we don't always know when things are going to happen. Right. And so what we must do is that once you have aligned yourself with that which is the calling on your life, your passion, something that you believe in very strongly, you must play that game and see it all the way through and stay the course. And eventually, I believe you either hit pay dirt or down the side of the mountain that you're working on to conquer.
Right.
See, because there's no guarantees. I tell people, smell the roses along the way, because there's no guarantee that we're going to reach our goals. So you have to have balance in your life. There were over 2,000 people on September the 11th who went to work expecting to come home to be with their families. And they had dreams and they had goals and things they wanted to achieve, and it did not happen. So I think that you have to have balance in what you're doing. You have to begin to smell the roses, be consciously aware of where you are each day and get the most out of each day, as well as being focused on your goals and knowing that it will happen when it happens, and that's when it will happen. Everything that I worked on, some things happened within the time frame that I wanted them to happen, but a lot of things that did not happen. And I saw people along the way who became frustrated, who became discouraged, and they took a delay as a denial, and they turned around.
Yep.
We experience what is called by Joseph Campbell the long, dark journey of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if you are able to stay and to hold your ground and to persist and move forward during that period, that your gifts will begin to reveal its secrets to you and take you the rest of the way. And I think that because I've stayed the course, and if you stay the course, and everybody that's listening, that eventually there will come those moments in quiet hours where you get ideas, you get a phone call, you get a breakthrough, and you said, I can't believe it, I'm here.
Right.
And then that happens at different stages of your life. It happened to me when I had a talk show and they paid me $2 million not to speak and $5 million to do the show. It was the highest rated, fastest canceled talk show in the history of television. But at least I had it.
There you know, you had one.
I was there and in New York, big time, and being driven around in a limousine. A lot of people never made it that far.
That's far.
I had it when I had the PBS special I produced for them 10 years ago, and I just did another one.
Right, I was
recently.
There.
Yes. Yeah. And so you have those moments, those breakthroughs, those special moments of achievement that you can look at and say, how did I get here? You assess that, you embrace that, you enjoy it, and now you look at where you want to go and said, okay, as Robert Shula said, you peak, P-E-A-K, to peak, P-E-E-K, to see how much further you can go.
Let's go a little further on that. Not to bring up some of the rough stuff, but what was it like when your show canceled, Les? I mean, like you said, that's the big time, man.
Oh, listen, in 5 years, I had a show that canceled. My mother passed.
Wow.
I went through a divorce from someone that I love very much, and I was diagnosed with prostate cancer.
Mm.
Now, any of those things by themselves could take you out. Now, during the tough times, during those character-building experiences, one of the things I tell people, never say I had a bad day, because your words are powerful. Thou shalt decree a thing that shall be established unto you, and shall accomplish that whereunto it has been sent. Say I had a character-building day, you know. Yeah. Never say that I'm broke. Say I'm overcoming a cash flow problem. So as I was going and growing through that character-building experience, that what I had to keep in mind was that this too shall pass. That, as the saying goes, bad times don't last always. You know, Robert Shula said the tough times never last, but tough people do. And so I had to know that this too shall pass. And I had to lean into it and experience the pain, had to cry, had to have that feeling of loneliness and isolation, and also have the feelings, particularly when I was diagnosed with prostate cancer, that this might be it. that this might be the way in which I'm going to be taken out. I had moments when I did not handle it extremely well. And during those moments, it's one of the things that I suggested people do when they're going through tough times is ask for help, not because you're weak, but because you want to remain strong, and ask for help and don't stop until you get it.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people won't ask for help because of pride. Pride cometh before fall, because of ego, edging God out. Ask for help, not because you're weak, but because you want to remain strong, and ask for help and don't stop until you get it. So I talked to a lot of friends and family members who prayed for me, and people who gave me help, who gave me advice, who gave me guidance, and many times the same advice that I'd given them.
Yeah.
But I was staggering from life. I was knocked out on my feet, and I couldn't see it then. It's sometimes very difficult to see the picture when you're in the frame.
Oh, they're so true about that. So give me some of the actual realistic negative thoughts that really went through your head. I mean, you're down at the bottom, and do you ever think, like, I mean, be upfront now, do you ever think, like, can I get back up? Or, I mean...
Well, yes. Well, one of the things that you've got to feel, one, is that it's possible for you to get back up.
Do you really feel that, though, when you're down at the bottom?
Yes.
I mean, because, you can be in tears and say that, right?
You can be in tears. You can have an empty bank account. You can have a bad diagnosis from a doctor, as I had. And say, hey, you got perhaps 2 to 3 years to live. What you have to begin to feel, one, that it's possible that if anybody at any point in time been in this situation or something worse and they came back, then I can come back. 8 out of 10 millionaires have been financially bankrupt. Walt Disney filed bankruptcy seven times and had 2 nervous breakdowns. So if anybody has been in this situation that it's possible, then I can come back. The other thing is it's necessary. And that's I mean, to me, that means that rolling over and dying is not an option.
Mm-hmm.
That not only is it possible that I can come back, it's necessary that I come back. It is my destiny to come back. This is not going to stop me. I am more powerful than anything that can ever happen to me. And because of my faith in myself, in my dreams, and a power greater than myself, I know that I'm going to come back, and I expect to come back.
Mm.
I'm going to learn everything from this. There's a quote that I love very much. Wherever you find yourself, at some point in time, you made an appointment to be there. So I have to look at myself and take ownership. What did I do? What role did I play in setting my life up so that I would have this on my hand? I'm going to take ownership. I'm going to take total responsibility for where I am, because once I own it, now I have to begin to say, if I put myself in this situation, then I can get myself out of it. Elsie Robinson said, things may happen around you and things may happen to you, but the only things that really count are the things that happen in you. And part of what I suggest to people, don't make any excuses to yourself. Don't beat yourself up. No excuse is acceptable for feeling sorry for yourself or having a pity party. What you've got to do is assess the situation and then decide that you're going to do whatever it takes to get out and commit yourself to doing whatever is required. And the other piece that I think is important in that process of reinventing yourself and reclaiming power of your life is begin to expect things to get better for you. You have
That's
to a have a mindset
mm-hmm.
that you expect to get back to where you once were and to go beyond that, because now you're stronger, you have more experiences under your belt, you've learned some things that you did not know, and now it's time for you to pour all of that into your life and take yourself to the next level.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, in your travels all over the world, what do you think is one of the number one or two or three top excuses that people make because they don't get to that level?
You know, I saw a movie called The Truman Story, and it was about a young man who was born in a situation where he was under cameras, and his whole life was on television. Everybody else, they were playing a role, but his life was real. And he was trying to escape, and someone said he would not escape, and the question was asked why. And the guy said, because most people accept the circumstances that they have been given. What I'm finding is that most people in life are where they are because they have accepted that.
Yeah.
They have said to themselves, based upon their circumstances, based upon their mental conditioning, and based upon their memory, making decisions out of their memory as opposed to their imagination, they have accepted, this is it for me. Even though we're born in perhaps the most powerful country on the planet, the freest country the world has ever known, and have all types of opportunities available to us, most people are suffering from possibility blindness. They can't see the possibility of moving their lives from where they are to where they can go. That's why I talk about having the power of a larger vision, a vision of yourself beyond where you are, beyond your circumstances mm-hmm. and transcending anything that you have experienced.
Yeah, that's true. Let me ask you this. You've been in this business now, like you said, well over 20 years. How do you stay motivated? What still motivates you?
Well, you have to continue to raise the bar on yourself. Nietzsche said, if you know the why for living, you can endure almost anyhow. When I first got involved, it was to make my mother proud. It was to take care of my mother. It was to become financially independent, to be my own boss. Now I've gone back to the drawing board. I bought my mother over 4 homes. I took care of her until she passed. She passed to breast cancer, so my goal is to raise funds for breast cancer research. I'm a prostate cancer conqueror. My goal is to make men aware of the need for their digital rectal examination, their PSA tests, and to have campaigns that will make men aware to get their tests early. My goal is to train and develop other speakers, to reinvent myself. I've been doing this for a very long time. Now it's time to leverage that knowledge and experience and pour that into some other people. So as I begin to look into the future, there's a quote that Jim Rohn says. He says, when the end comes for you, let it find you conquering a new mountain, not sliding down an old one. So I've been sliding down this old mountain of speaking for a long time. Now I'm conquering a new mountain of being known as a speech coach, training and developing speakers and helping make a difference in our youth. They're 60% of our population, but young people are 100% of our future. So I'm working on establishing my legacy of making a difference in young people, reducing the recidivism rate in our prisons, the dropout rate, mm-hmm. and training and developing the best speakers on the planet.
Well, I can tell you this, you have certainly helped me. I mean, I think back to, it's been several years now, but I remember when you first came and visited me in my other office I used to have. I don't think I have slept since. And I've gotten here at 5:30 this morning. Day before yesterday, I was in at 5 o'clock in the morning. And just knowing the level that you've taken yourself to from where you're at, that in itself has motivated me. Just knowing that you've done that has just opened the vision for me. And I appreciate that. And what you've done for me is you've helped me to see that it really is possible, but you've just got to keep going forward. You've got to keep going forward.
And that's key. It's nothing romantic. It's nothing deep. It's just common sense, but not common practice that you've got to keep going, and eventually you're going to hit pay dirt. I remember hearing a speaker once after many years of frustration of going to seminars and workshops, and this guy I thought was perhaps one of the most boring speakers I'd ever heard, but he said something I'll never forget. He told the people to wake up the people near them in the workshop. Everybody was dozing except me because I came there on a Greyhound bus. And he said, if you can just get what I'm about to say to you, you can leave here and you won't ever need another class for the rest of your life if you just follow this. He said, I think the majority of you in this room are much better speakers than I am. He said, but the reason I'm standing up here and I've made over $10 million and you're seated out there is because I represent the thoughts you have rejected for yourself. I represent the thoughts you have rejected for yourself.
One more time.
Yes, I represent the thoughts you have rejected for yourself. Where that man was standing, what he was doing and accomplishing, at some point in my life has said, I can do that. And then I rejected that. I told myself I couldn't do it.
So with all the people that you meet, the people that you train and teach, what would you say, if you were to put it in a nutshell, what would be maybe the most important mindset for them, Les?
If you ask most people, do you want to become successful? Most people will say yes. Uh-huh. Yes, I want to become successful. No, that's not really the question you should ask. The question is, do you expect to be successful? Because want shows up in conversation. Expectation shows up in preparation. A person say, I want to lose weight. And I ask, look here, given the fact that you're not involved in a coaching program to help you to begin to learn how to make better choices when you sit down at the table, because your best thinking has produced this body that you have now that's overweight, given the fact that you don't have a physical fitness trainer, someone to help you motivate yourself and engage in a routine that can really help you to begin to achieve optimal health, do you expect to doing the same thing in the same way, and given the fact that you produce this without any intervention, do you expect, without making any radical change in your behavior and your choices and your mindset, do you expect to reach your goal? And that's a whole different other conversation.
Yeah, because what that does, which I'm a big teacher of it, it pulls the emotion out and puts the logic in.
Oh, yes, and also places action in it and gives people a track to run on. So that's why I said it's one thing to give it lip service. It's something else to give it a life commitment. Here are the things that I'm going to do that's going to move me in the direction of where I want to go. And as a result of that activity, I will create a level of momentum that refuses to be denied.
How do you create the discipline to do all that, though? Because obviously that takes discipline. I mean, you've got to be a disciplined person to get to your level.
Yes, you've got to assess why you're doing it. Nietzsche said, if you know the why for living, you can endure almost anyhow. What is it about you? And what is it that drives you? What is it that causes you to get up in the morning? What is it that when the tough times come, and they're going to come, when life catches you on the blind side, and that's going to happen, when it drops you to your knees, what is it that can give you the wherewithal to get back up again? I have a saying I love, that when life knocks you down, try and land on your back, because if you can look up, you can get up. What is it that can help you get back up again that will be your rod and staff to comfort you, to take you through those tough times? Because tough times are going to come. It's not personal. Don't say, well, why did this have to happen to me? Why not you? Who would you suggest? You want to give us some names? Okay, it's your turn now. Right. You're going to get your butt kicked. You're going to get hurt. You're going to get dirt kicked in your face. People are going to disappoint you. They're going to lie on you. You're going to become involved in politics. Some people are going to call you everything but a child of God. All of that stuff is going to happen. It's par for the course. So you have to begin to deal with it. This is no place for wimps.
Yep.
Understand that. You got to be willing to take a stand for your dream, for yourself. Ask yourself, am I worth this effort? Is your life worthy of what it takes to make it? And if you decide that it is, then be willing to pay the price, whatever that price is.
What's the price you've had to pay?
Losing friends, personal relationships.
Let me interrupt you right there.
Yes.
Somebody's going to think, wait a minute, Les. I want to be more successful. Let's say, you know, we're talking about business. I'm going to be more and want to be more successful. I expect to be more successful financially. I'm going to lose some of my friends.
You're going to lose your friends. You might
Why?
Go through a divorce because you change. And if people don't change with you, now you're going to make a decision. Sometimes people will put you through the precarious position of making a decision between them and your dreams. You'll have a feeling of being alone because you might not be understood. You're different. You're stepping to the beat of a different drummer. It's a very lonely feeling many times when you're striving to get on top in life. Is that, you know, always strive to get on top in life because it's the bottom that's overcrowded.
Yeah.
You know, it's lonely at the top, but you eat better.
Yeah.
So
we've done that in the Bahamas. Last week we had some lobster. That was good.
It's a tough thing. You will question your sanity.
That's a good one, Les, because
don't fit in.
No, you don't.
And
the reason is because the people who have the mindset that we have, we're in a percentile that the average person is not. And if people listening to this are thinking, well, you know, I don't seem to fit in, well, that's a good thing.
Yes, absolutely, because you have a different path and a different rhythm of life that you're responding to. We move with a sense of urgency. You pick up the pace. Because you know tomorrow is not promised. You know, Thoreau says, if a man doesn't keep pace with his companions, perhaps he's listening to the beat of a different drummer. Let him dance to the music that he hears, however measured or far apart. So you are marching to the beat of a different drummer. So don't think it's strange that you don't fit in, that people won't be able to relate to you. And while misery loves company, so does success. There are other people out there like you that are hungry, that are determined, that are driven, that are motivated, that have dedicated themselves to a dream, and you want to align yourself with them. You want to have them pour into your life so that you can be a source of encouragement for each other when the tough times come. All of that's a part of the process. You're going to pay a price. There's a reason that most people don't come out here, because they don't want to get hurt. You're going to get hurt. They don't want to be disappointed. You're going to be disappointed. They don't want to experience any defeats in life and rejections. You're going to experience a lot of defeats, a lot of rejections, a lot of setbacks. Willie Jolly said a setback is a setup for a comeback.
Yeah,
okay,
man.
That sounds real cute, but it's hard to begin to say that when life has worn your natural butt out, when you've lost your money and you see them drive off with your car and your house is in foreclosure. It's tough. When when the bills are stacking up high and you don't have the money to pay them and you can't make payroll, it's tough to hold the vision and be positive and think positive and be enthusiastic. It's hard then. Life said, where's your motivation now?
That it will say.
Yes.
You know, one thing I have appreciated with your friendship is, and I hear this from all the people that I meet that know you, is that you're very, very down to earth. How have you prevented your success from getting to your head?
Well, the thing is that I don't think that money changes you. I just think it makes you more of what you are. You know, I ride in a limousine with the window down because I paid too much for that car for you not to know I'm in there. So I think it just makes you more what you are. If you're a nice person, it gives you a platform to be nicer. If you're an obnoxious person, it gives you a larger platform to be a jackass. So, you know, I really think that what we have to do is not define ourselves by what we achieve and accomplish, begin to know that we are here because of God's grace and mercy. And it's a humbling experience. I wish I could say that I'm here because I'm such a smart guy. A lot of people prayed for me. A lot of people helped me. A lot of people opened doors for me. A lot of people made stuff happen for me. So I'm here because I'm blessed. I feel that there's a hand on my life that went before me to make the crooked places straight, and I'm not through yet. I'm just getting started.
I believe it, man. So how do you maintain your balance with all this?
Well, what you have to do is enjoy life along the way. Don't allow the little boy or the little girl to die in you. Someone asked me the other day, why do you laugh so much? Why are you so funny? I said, because life is going to bring me some pain, and I know it. And it's just a matter of time that pain, sickness, death, tears, tragedy of all kind are always stalking us 24/7, trying to get their hands on us or someone we care about. So knowing that, I'm getting in as much laughter, as much as enjoyment, as much love as I can, and as much accomplishments as I can in the meantime, in between time, because it's coming. I know it. It's inevitable. It's unavoidable.
So what do you do for fun, Les?
I read. I talk to crazy people like you. I love to dance. I love doing things that make me laugh and make other people laugh. I love making people laugh. In fact, my work is really fun. Speaking is not work for me. It's fun. The only part of my business is work is getting there. Going through the airport, taking my shoes off, that's the part that I hate. Knowing that somewhere you're flying laughing, said Les is probably now bent over somewhere and said, what are you looking in there for?
Well, you know I'm out to change that for you.
That's right, that's right, that's right.
You got to quit that commercial flying and stuff. Uh-huh. Let's switch gears just a little bit. Let's go back to the customer. What's a customer mean to you, Les?
To me, a customer is about knowing them and what caused them to tick, putting together a game plan and a strategy to anticipate what their needs are and to exceed their level of expectation. To me, it's about developing a lifelong relationship through the quality and the quantity of the service that you provide for them and your level of identification and close attention that you give to their needs.
How important are they to you?
They're very important. They're the life love of our business. And one of the things that allowed me to become successful in my industry was that I decided not just to be a talking head to get up and give a speech that I've given to everybody else. I decided to spend my time knowing the customers. I'll never forget that a lady who was talking about the added value her company was providing for her customers. And she said, it's not our intention to please our customers or to satisfy our customers. Our intention is to amaze them. And that impressed me. And I decided to amaze my clients by the level of homework, of research that I would do for them in custom design and incorporate personal stories and examples and the languaging of their industry in my presentation. So they would say, wait a minute, this guy knows what we're up against. He knows the possibilities. He knows what the problems are. He knows what the possible solutions are. And he's taken the time to get to know us intimately. We appreciate that. And that has created a reputation for repeat business and referral business that I get over $3 million worth of business a year.
Throw me some of the names of those companies, and they are big.
AT&T, Procter & Gamble, McDonald's Corporation, IBM, Xerox, you name it, I've done them for the Fortune 500 companies.
Now, when you got started in your business, though, Les, obviously you did not have the marketing savvy, the money to put into your marketing and have your brochures and the videos and all the nice stuff that you have now. So how does a person, whether it be in this business they want to get it, no matter what the business is, obviously, when you try to emulate somebody, the person you're emulating has things that are better than yours. You know, they've been doing it for years. So where did you get started?
Well,
how did you get
started? Well, I didn't have the money for the four-color brochure. And even though I have it now, I don't have any four-color brochure that I use to do a mass mailing to solicit business.
Right.
And I have no strategy to solicit business.
Oh, I know. You make
me
sick.
In the traditional sense. Okay. I have, perhaps up to this point, over 800 speaking requests at this time. Now, how I got that is I teach not only that you don't get in life what you want, you get in life what you are. You don't achieve success, you attract it.
Yeah.
So what you have to do is develop a reputation because of the high standards that you hold in terms of the quality of the service that you provide, that those people will bring you back. Plus, they will tell other people about you who will bring you in. 95% of the decisions that are made to bring in speakers or to buy products or services are made by people based upon a personal recommendation. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at yourself and say, how is it that I can provide a service that will cause the people that I provide this service to bring me back to different areas of their company or to them directly a few months later? Or how is it that I can so impact them that they will go and talk to other people and say, I saw this guy, Gary, and he was unbelievable. You have got to bring them in. There are two types of marketing strategies. There's a push strategy where you're trying to get in the door with your brochures and your telemarketing. Or there's a pull strategy where people behind that door have seen you or heard about you, and now they're working to pull you in.
Yeah, that's a good point. So when it comes to marketing, how important? I mean, I know this
my
answer
for you. My speech
is
my marketing tool.
Yeah,
when I'm speaking, I'm marketing. Because of the way that I bring my presentation, because I'm different than other speakers, because I make sure that I have certain things, certain ingredients, information that can empower them. I'm delivering it in a way that can inspire them to transcend themselves. I custom design it to say, hey, I know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I know what you're up against. I make it dramatic. I have poignant moments. It's a lot of humor that's in it. It's a different kind of experience that I've given them of me, that when they leave there, they've had the Les Brown experience, and now they just cannot wait to act on the stuff that I've given them. They've had some personal changes in their lives and the results that they wanted, and now they're going to tell everybody, I heard a guy today, and he changed my life.
Yep.
That's my marketing every time that I speak.
How important is networking to you?
I think the networking is very important. Learning things from you has helped me to optimize the efficiency of my organization. Talking with people that's involved in your industry that you can learn from, all of those things are very important in helping you to go to the next level because of the fact that all of us can go so far with our energy, with our contacts, with our resources, but by connecting strategically with some other like-minded people, we can begin to go even higher than we can ever begin to imagine.
You know, and I think that's one thing that we need as an industry, in the speaking industry, that we need to commend ourselves, and I'll tell you why. When I flew down to the Bahamas to do something with you, I think it was with AT&T, there was a gentleman with me, and he was so impressed that you put me in front of your contacts, and I put you in front of my contacts, and I give you my leads, and you give me your leads. He just couldn't imagine, because basically we're colleagues, but we're competitors, but we're really colleagues, but we're still willing to do so much for each other. And I think that's where people in other industries, they lack that ability to communicate. They look at everybody as competitors. I want to put you out, when they can do so much if they work together.
There's enough out here for everybody. I have a
say that again.
There's enough out here for everybody. I have a vested interest for you become successful. I'm doing what I'm doing for you for selfish reasons, because if I can help you to be successful, something I can say to you that can enhance and take your presentation to the next level, when you go out there, if you fall on your face, you don't just represent Gary Cox, you represent me. So whatever happens to you also happens to me as well. So I'm looking for a Gary Cox being so good the people will say to a Gary Cox or people like Gary Cox, hey, where can I find any other guys like you guys or any other young ladies that are doing this whole thing? Because whatever happens to me also happens to you.
Right.
So if we begin to look into the future and know that there's abundance out here, there's enough for everybody, and if we hold ourselves to high standards and move with integrity to help to empower each other, my philosophy is help somebody and help yourself. I had a high school principal who said, love, happiness, and support are perfumes you can't sprinkle on others without getting a few drops on yourself. That when I'm helping you, I'm really helping myself. The least that I've done to these, my brethren, I'm doing it also unto him. And so as we begin to move into the future and we know that and operate like that, that what I do for you, you don't owe me anything. The universe is going to take care of me. That's my faith. That's my knowing. And I have a life of accomplishments and blessings that have been bestowed upon me that I know that it's true and that it's real.
Yeah, and there's no doubt you're a giver. And I really, at the bottom of my heart, Les, want to thank you so much for all that you have done for me. So thanks for your time. Keep up the good work, and let's go look at some jets.
And listen, thank you very much, and continue to motivate me and inspire me to get on one of those small planes.
Okay, we'll do it.
I don't believe in working God overtime.
Well, we'll try our best not to.
Okay. I'd just like to say, finally, this has been Mrs. Mamie Brown's baby boy, Leslie Calvin Brown. It's been a plum-pleasing pleasure as well as a privilege. Thank you, Gary.